We always enjoy our conversations with Dan Dockage. He's on the line, ESPN's college basketball analyst. Dan, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys? Thanks for having me on.
Well, things are good here in Nashville. I boldly predicted Belmont would win, and they took care of business last night. Do you like them against Maryland?
Yeah, I think they got a shot against. I think they got a shot against Maryland. There are some teams in the Big Ten that, how do I put this right, that can come and go. Let's put it that way. And Maryland can absolutely come and go. They'll play well for a while, even inside of a game. I mean, they'll go away if you let them go away. I thought that Belmont last night was tough because you're playing a Temple team that has three guards that are really good. Belmont hung in there after losing a lead, rebuilt the lead. I tell you what, I don't know that I'm going to pick Belmont to beat Maryland, but that's the game I'm watching. I think that's a hell of a basketball game.
Dan, we just had Northeastern's assistant coach Tom Murphy on with us talking about their matchup against Kansas tomorrow. He said Northeastern's experienced, they're seasoned, they're not just there, they're not just happy to be there. Kansas is young, they're ready to play, and they're healthy. Do you see an upset in that game or no?
No, but I tell you, I'm not going to be surprised. Billy Kahn does a great job as a coach, and Northeastern has been building. Here's the deal with Kansas. This, to me, is the worst Kansas team I've seen in forever. And that doesn't mean they're bad. I mean, that's a high level. But when I look at Kansas, you know, Azubuike went out. Vic isn't there. It seems like it's been a hassle all year. Azubuike was a big, big difference maker when I watched them early in the year. And the other thing is, the guards haven't exactly developed like I thought they would. Like, I watched them in the Champions Classic here in Indy, and this kid Quentin Grimes was I thought, man, by the time this season's over, he's going to be the guy we're all talking about, and he's good. I mean, he's not terrible, but he's not as good. And I'm not going to be surprised if there is an upset, but it is always so hard for me to pick against Bill Self. Hell, I still think they won this year's Big 12. I mean, the way I look at the world, you know what I mean? It's like I just have a hard time because I've just seen it for so many years. But this is the least Kansas team that I've seen in a long, long time. Maybe as long as Bill's been there.
You know this better than anybody. Look, you just can get a different perspective of a team or teams when you are there in person and you see them when you're courtside. We just had the SEC tournament here in our backyard this past week, and I remember in 03, I've told this story before, the radio station sent me out to Phoenix to cover that Sweet 16. Vanderbilt was out there taking on UConn. Syracuse and Alabama were out there. I was sitting courtside. Vanderbilt came out for the warm-ups. Then UConn came out, and I started texting people and went, oh, boy. This is not going to be good. I mean, you see that Connecticut team up close and personal, and I immediately went, oh, this is going to be a long, long night. You've been there all year. You've been around a lot of teams. Who kind of has that effect when you see them up close and personal that you went, oh, boy, wow, this team's got a little bit different than what I thought?
You know what's interesting? I almost got fired because of that. In 1991, we played Kansas. And we were pretty good, and Kansas was just all right. And they beat the hell out of us. And after the game, Coach Knight went off on me. I was the assistant in charge of scouting that game because I didn't tell them how big they were in person. the team, I'm telling you, the team that, and this is going to the Big Ten, when they come on the floor, you look at Minnesota and you go, what the hell? Like, this kid Amir Coffey handles it, he shoots it. But, oh, by the way, he's about 6'8½", about 220 pounds. When you see them, everybody's 6'5" or bigger. Everybody, it's just like, man, holy cow. That's the one team that really sticks out for me when you ask me that question. Now, I don't know if they're going to beat Louisville. Hell, I've done Louisville game early when they beat Michigan State, and they were really good. They've been up and down. Minnesota, you don't know if they're going to play. You don't know if Coffey's going to drop 32 like he did against Northwestern, or he's going to go 0-for like he has. So, but I'm telling you, you're so right about that. You look at a team like, okay, UCF has this kid Taco Fall, right? And Taco Fall is supposed to be 7'5", whatever. I swear to God, I did a game of theirs 2 years ago. I went up and introduced myself. The dude was 7'40". It was unbelievable. I totally get what you're saying, but honest to God, the team that bounces out with me, and the team that Belmont's going to play is really impressive when you look at them, and that's Maryland. Guards are 6'5", other than Anthony Cowan, and Bruno Fernando, I swear to God, he might be one of the three or four most fun guys in the country to watch and to coach because he plays with a joy and an enthusiasm and a toughness, a little bit like what Zion Williamson does. But sometimes, as I said, they're just not there. But I guarantee you, when Belmont looks at the difference in the physical size of Maryland and Belmont, it's going to be stark. But I think Belmont will hang in there with them.
Dan Dockich is with us. He is with ESPN. And Dan, I watched a game that you were doing in the ACC tournament, and one of the things you were harping on, I think it was the NC State Clemson game, is working the ball inside back out to get to the three-point line. And I see so many games where almost nobody posts up. The lane is always open. There's a lot of high screens out, maybe some cutters to the basket. But the game has really changed that way. It almost is like it's a rare thing to see somebody go down and really be a classic post-up man.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. Like, it truthfully, it's the reason Indiana, with a top 10 pick and a really good postman, isn't in the NCAA tournament, and they're in the NIT. You're going to see, though, an outlier to that. What you said is so true, number one. And number two, you're going to see a little difference with Bruno Fernando against Belmont. Belmont will throw the ball in there, and he will go to work on the block. But it does amaze me. It amazes me how teams are not comfortable playing possession after possession by throwing it to even a good postman on the block, even if they score. Here's what I mean by that. Like, all right, we're playing you. I've thrown it to my postman three times in a row. We've scored three straight buckets either in the post or kicking it out. Five straight possessions after that, hell, we just jack up a three. It's crazy. But I'll tell you who doesn't do that. Roy Williams doesn't do that. Izzo doesn't do that. Duke does do that. Duke doesn't have a post guy, really, that they're going to go to, except when they decide that Zion Williamson needs to be the post. I'm telling you, Calipari, if they get a couple scores on the block, he's going back to the block. Well, what do all those have in common? They're really good freaking teams. You know what I mean? Like, they're the best teams in the country. So I don't get it. Teams, you're so right about that. Teams are so uncomfortable playing inside out, even when the guy's really good on the block.
Well, I want to ask you about Gonzaga, because here they are as a number one seed. And the thing that gets talked about every year is they have the tough matchups in November. We watch them a lot. Then they sort of go off the grid and they do their thing in their conference. But what factor do you think it is not having those battles week in and week out when they go into the tournament and now everything's on the line?
Yeah, I think they've handled it as well as you can. I mean, their margin of victory this year was historic. I don't know, it was 26 or 27 in their own league. I mean, that's unheard of, obviously, in the SEC or the Big Ten or the Big, you know, the Big 12, whatever, Pac-12 even. They handle it as well as you can. I don't know that it affects them anymore. I think that they are they're kind of, how do I put this? They kind of moved into rarefied air, meaning they're in the conversation with the best of the best, and they've done it because they've been now to a Final Four championship game. They've done it because they've been, you know, so consistent, and they've been to the Sweet 16. So I think they handled it well. What I'm curious about with this year's Gonzaga team is what you just said for this year's team. This year's team did not handle a team like St. Mary's playing them neck and neck. And here's the thing. St. Mary's didn't beat Gonzaga by making 12 out of 15 threes or making 18 crazy threes or anything like that. I'm watching that game, and I text my brother. I said, look, Gonzaga's not as good as St. Mary's tonight. Now, tomorrow, yesterday, but on that particular night. So maybe this team won't handle it. I don't know. I'll say this about St. Mary's, and this did not happen. Or excuse me, I'll say this about Gonzaga, and this did not happen in the WCC final against St. Mary's. Zach Norvell is one of the clutch kids that I have seen. He's a guard. He's from Chicago. Last year's a freshman. True story. Gonzaga was going to get beat in regulation against UNC Greensboro. Norvell hits a shot. Gonzaga was going to get beat down five late against Ohio State. Zach Norvell hits two threes. He did not do that in that game. It was the first time I've seen Gonzaga get shook. But it's also to your point, and your point is a valid one, it's also the first time they've been in a dogfight since November. So I think overall they've handled it well, but I think this year's team did not handle it well when they were faced with it in the finals.
Let me throw one more at you, Dan. You've got LSU. They've had the same coach all year long. Coach, you know, they have a great year, regular season champion in the SEC. We now know about the suspension, all of the clouds hanging over. But just from a simple coaching perspective, when the head guy's not there, how tough is it for the other guy to come in and everything go okay? I mean, that looks like a really precarious position to
who
be in.
Totally blew their game here.
It certainly showed in the game here against Florida.
Well, let me even add to it. I did that at Indiana as an interim head coach, and it was weird. Like, kid that I worked with every day, DJ White, every day. Like, he didn't have a hook shot as a senior in college, and I said, look, we got to get you a jump hook. I mean, he was my guy. When they named me the interim head coach, he stood up in front of the team and said, coach, we're not playing for you. I'm like, what? You're my guy. What are you talking about? I started laughing, right? Here's the thing with it. First, it is akin to the student teacher being there a little bit. Second, you know, everybody looks at Steve Fisher, and that was a miracle run that had great leadership and seniors and veterans, and Glenn Rice was beyond good. So everybody points to that, but that's once, and really that's it. That's just him. That's it. I'll give you some little bit of background. When you're going through an NCAA thing like they are going through, it's not just we suspended the coach. If we suspended the coach, now we're bringing in people to interview them. It's not just the kid smart that had to be reinstated. I guarantee you numerous kids were brought in and talked to. It's a hell of a distraction. And then you add to it, I mean, let's be perfectly honest. The coach, the interim coach, gets a technical that really costs him the game. That causes a little bit of lack of trust. You're in this situation every day in practice. You don't feel like anybody's supporting you. The administration has taken away your coach. I am not going to be surprised at all if they get beat by Yale. It is, there's so much in the background in it. Like, it's not just, all right, Joe Oliva, the AD, suspended the coach and he's sitting behind his desk all day and nothing else is going on. No, you're suspending a coach. You're dealing with lawyers. You're bringing in players, finding out, okay, what did you get? What did you know? This is a wiretap. Said they paid players. Did they pay you? I mean, it's just a mess, and it's just ongoing, and maybe it doesn't affect them. For the kids' sake, I hope they play a good game, but I'm telling you, it's not nearly as cut and dried or easy. Going back to when Coach Knight got fired in 2000 here at Indiana, they got whooped by Pepperdine by 22, and it was all the stuff that I'm talking to you about.
Remember Sean Miller last year against Buffalo. Arizona got creamed.
Right. Absolutely. Because here's the deal. Teams at this time of year that you're going to play are usually pretty good. And what happens is you get wrapped up in your own cocoon if things are going well. Like, Yale is in its own little cocoon. They have a rhythm to them now. LSU, I can't imagine them having a rhythm to them. Now, they got talent. They're used to winning. They got terrific point guard, athletic guys up front. But you're playing against a team that is solid in not only, I don't know, their lifestyle or their existence, but really talented Yale is to shoot the basketball. So I'm fascinated by that one. In fact, I think I'm taking Yale.
You convinced me.
You may have changed my bracket. Dan, always appreciate the visit.
No. Never. There's a saying in Indianapolis, only fade Dockage. Fade Dockage.
Dan, thanks as always. Good to talk to you.
Anytime, fellas. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
All right, Dan Dockage, ESPN college basketball analyst. He's getting ready to do his daily show, which is always intriguing. In fact, just following on Twitter is always fun every day.